You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
Okay, I want to thank all of you for coming. I know it's the last session of the day. You've had probably a very good day, but a pretty long one. The title of the session is How to Interview Famous or Not So Famous People and Live to Tell About It. Kind of a curious title, so... Well, it's always good when it's the presenter being the one who has their cell phone ring instead of someone in the audience ring. The title of the session is kind of curious. There's a few different directions I could go in this. So what I really like to do, I know this is often viewed as a stall tactic, but I'd love to hear from each one of you why you came to this session. If there's something specific you're looking to find out or discuss or hear about, just so I can, I got moderately amusing anecdotes I could tell you all day, but I want to try to cater this toward what you're actually here for. So if we could just start.
Well, I've interviewed a couple of, I guess, famous people, and I don't know if I did that great of a job, so I'm happy to learn some new tips.
Okay, so we're in the same boat then. Okay.
Hey, you know, you could unplug that.
Walk around, yeah.
Yeah. Good idea.
Say that again.
Okay, yeah. I'm Stephanie Roberts with Listen Chair and Cool People I Know, and I've interviewed a couple of quote-unquote famous people and you know, did a fairly okay job, but I'm interested in learning some new tips and tricks.
I'm Laura Ross, and I'm with Rocky Horror Pod Show and Coffee and Tea Show, and I've interviewed some people, but I don't know that it went so well, but nobody really famous. I've got some friends who are fairly internet famous that I'd like to interview, but it hasn't happened yet.
Okay. You're more interested in finding like how you can get interviews.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Ron, and my show is called The Final Taxi. Most of my people who I talk about are dead, because my show's about obituaries. But I have interviewed someone who, quote, channel John Lennon, and that didn't go so well, so I just want to get some tips. I do have some of the other things I talk about is some as lost people who are celebrities who or celebrities, maybe, you know, kid celebrities that I've got some intros to that I want to end up talking to before they die. So that's one thing that I want us to maybe to talk to the people who maybe someone that's touched their life, or maybe a celebrity who probably won't be around much longer.
I'm Michelle Shane, and I volunteer for a nonprofit group called STC Atlanta, Technical Communication. And I'm starting to podcast their members for their website, and I'm just learning how to interview people.
My name is Bill. I don't have a podcast. Puts me in the minority here. Wish I had something as original as The Final Taxi, because that's just fascinating. I'm here just because I imagine if I were to do a podcast, it would involve talking to people, and people of all stripe, and just want to hear what everyone has to say.
Hey, I'm Eric Flavors of EJFlavors.com, and what I normally do is a musical blog for the most part. we end up meeting a lot of people who are famous musicians, however, I don't get to interview them, mainly because I'm pretty shy about that. So trying to get over that hump and actually try to start interviewing these guys.
I'm Joe Polk. I do a show called MTB Cast. I've interviewed people that are pro racers and that sort of thing, but not necessarily famous to anybody else who doesn't ride a bike. But I'm kind of interested in hearing about other things and other ways that people interview people to see if there's anything that I'm sure there are things that I'm doing wrong, but I definitely like to hear how I can do a better job.
I'm Alex Venegas Steele. I don't have a podcast yet, but I'm planning on doing one, and I'm here to learn the skill of interviewing.
Hi, I'm Baby Ray Shaw. I work for the Lucas Group, which is an executive recruiter. And I've just started interviewing some of our recruiters that work in different industries, and I'm just trying to figure out how to speak better and how to make it so that I don't have to go back and cut out so many of my pauses and ums and so on.
My name is Karsh. I'm with blackgayblogger.com. And right now I'm just trying to branch my podcast out to reach different areas of the community. I do kind of sort of have an interview that's coming up in a few days, and I'm not really sure how to approach it. So I'm also here to try to learn some interviewing skills as well on how to approach it.
My name is Lisa Lehman. I'm with an organization called Ideas Unleashed, working with nonprofits, and I'm here to learn the techniques to take back to my groups that use us so that I can show them the tools.
My name is Gerald Moody. I'm just learning podcasting. I'm here with my daughter, and she has a podcast called Phantom Power Comics Podcast. It's a shameless plug for her. But I think interviews would be a good way to make a podcast, and I want to learn how to do it.
Hello, I'm Burton Sauls, and we do BigBonton.org and also City Treks, which is audio tours. And I've been interviewing people a lot recently, and I'd like to find out more about how to draw people out and more quickly put them at ease and also get them off of the beaten path of the official talking points. If I interview a Chamber of Commerce type, they're going to just say the same thing. I mean, and that's okay because they're trained to, but I like to see some ways that other people are using to get them, get to more of a face-to-face human-to-human interaction and get unofficial. Also, how to get interviews with people would be a good thing to know. But all these things are skills, and we can learn them, not just born with this knowledge.
Who do we get? Anybody else want to jump on?
Hi, my name is Shannon Clute, and I do two podcasts. One of them is actually an interview show. So I wish I could say something as interesting as I want tips on how to interview people who are channeling the dead, or want to know how to interview the not yet dead but completely forgotten. But nothing that creative. We have a podcast called Behind the Black Mask, Mystery Writers Revealed, where we interview mystery writers. So I'd be happy to talk to people about that.
Anybody else?
You're asking, I'm sorry, I just walked in.
We're asking people why they came to this session, what they'd like to learn.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm Tanya Freeman. Okay, and I have a show already, Wisdom Talks, where I do a lot of interviews with various different women, mostly about women's mysteries and things of that nature, and some book writers as well, some authors, and sometimes men that have subjects that deal with women or deal with health or something of that nature.
Actually, I just like hearing people talk about what their podcasts are. It always amazes me what all this out here. But if you haven't heard the spiel at any point today, iProng is a publication for iPod users. It's like an online magazine. We have a weekly podcast called iProng Radio, and we get on there, and if you were in the session before, you saw, we do some of the iPod news of the week and some technical things. But we try to get somebody on the show each week, an interview guest, and sometimes we'll get someone like, we got Amber because she was one of the organizers of PodCamp. We'll talk to someone from the iPod accessory industry. But the iPod being primarily a music player, we thought, let's go after the musicians. What's the worst that can happen? Maybe we end up with maybe we'll even get a name that somebody's heard of if we can build up to it. And so really just sort of jumped off a bridge and haphazardly started going after anyone we could get in a million different directions, and had some pretty decent success getting a few names that some of you have heard of. Now, the process of interviewing them is something different. And if you've never dealt with it, you'll find that the most difficult thing up front in almost all cases is finding the contact information for the person. If you're looking to interview Bob Dylan, you're obviously not going to call him up and you're not going to find his email address. You've got to find his publicist or his manager or some kind of connection. And if you go to the website and they're famous, it's usually not going to be there. They expect you to have that information. because if they hear from you, then they can assume that you're somebody who's in the know. I like to go Googling. I'll put the person's name in quotes. I'll put the word publicist next to it. I'll hope that maybe an article has been written where the publicist is quoted, and then maybe if I get the publicist's name, then I can go Googling for the publicist's name and find that management company, and then find an address like info@soandsomanagement.com. That's a total crapshoot. If you send out 10 of those, you might hear back from two, and maybe one of them will actually happen. And what will happen if you do get the interview? And this really kind of shocked me when the first one was John Taylor of Duran Duran, which is weird. Cool. We got a name we'd heard of. You know, I mean, they're not as big as they used to, but this is a, you know, if you're too young, you haven't heard of Duran Duran. Right? They sold 70 million albums. Okay, great to have him on. And they said, oh, well, you're doing a 15-minute interview. I said, okay. So I thought that meant, you know, you got roughly 15 minutes, and maybe you're going to be done, and it's a target. Now, what they mean is the publicist calls up, and by the way it works is you'll say to them, we tape on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Can you come on then? They'll say, well, that's great, but we can give you a Friday at 9:45 in the morning. Well, you take it if you want them. And then it's the night before, and they call and say, oh, sorry, John's schedule changed. We're going to have to do it a week from Thursday at 8:20 p.m. Okay. And you can't really complain because, you know, somebody who sold them millions of albums doesn't need to do your show. They're kind of doing you a favor. So you say, okay, but then you get the interview. The publicist calls up and says, okay, I've got John Taylor on the line. And he says hello. And the publicist says, okay, you've got 15 minutes, go. And you're kind of waiting for the click of the publicist hanging up before you hit recording because you don't want the click to mess up the recording. And you realize that click is never coming. The publicist stays on the line the whole time. They don't necessarily want you to know it, but they'll do something like cough or sneeze or something. Like, oh, you're still there. And you realize that the reason is if the interview goes south or if you ask something that they don't like, they might just jump in. Fortunately, I've never had it happen, but I'm always kind of thinking that in the back of my mind. And the other thing you realize is you've got 15 minutes like a stopwatch, and you've got to take advantage of that time because if you screw around a lot, you might end up with like 4 minutes of usable footage. So one of the things I learned very quickly is go in with your questions already written. And if you think you might need 10, write 15. Mark some of them as being things that you might skip because you don't know whether the person's going to give long or short answers. One of the best things you can do, and you have to be careful because you don't want to get too much of someone else's interview in your head because you might end up unintentionally copycatting them. But if you can go and find an audio interview that person has done before, well, now you know how long their answers tend to be. And another thing you can find out is that their speaking patterns can be kind of peculiar. Michael Ivins of The Flaming Lips, who, if you've ever seen anything about The Flaming Lips, it's Wayne Coyne that does the magazine interviews. If you're iPhone Radio, they give you Michael Ivins, the bass player, which is still really cool. And he had a lot of really cool things to say, but when I went and listened to an interview, to be honest, I hunted it down because I didn't know if his name was Ivins or Ivins, and I didn't want to get that wrong when I got him on the air. So I found an interview, found out it was Ivins, but then I listened and I realized he'll give an answer where he'll talk for a while, and then he'll stop and he'll think he's done. And just as the interviewer was asking the next question, Michael would come back in with the rest of his answer. So I talked to my co-host before. I said, okay, what we're going to do is, you know, if we think he's done, we're going to wait like another 10 seconds. And then if we end up with the empty space, we'll just cut out the empty space. And so that was good because, you know, there were one or two times where we cut him off, but it wasn't like where the previous person had cut him off like on every single answer. But the other thing is someone had said they didn't want to feel too scripted. I think you were talking about more like interviewing a politician or something. We were probably trying to get something they're hiding.
Yeah, from there.
Right. Now, the interviews we do, we're just bringing musicians on. We don't really want to put out something the musician doesn't want out there. So, I mean, we're not really digging, but the one thing we wanted to avoid is the idea of like the formulaic conversation. If you just stick to your questions, that interview probably could have been conducted over email. And it's a lot of work for you and for the artist because it can take months to set one of these up. And then it's a lot of work for the listener. They've got to download the whole thing and listen to it. And all they're hearing is an email exchange read out loud. So what I do is I go through on each question, and I try to write 3 or 4 possible follow-ups. And I'm trying to guess what the person's going to say. And I've come to a sort of an ironic realization that when I interview someone, I want to know the answer to every question they're going to give before they say it. It sounds really silly because why am I interviewing them? But I want to know what they're likely to say so what I can ask them next. I don't want to be taken by surprise. I mean, it'll happen. No matter how much preparation you do, you're going to get hit with something that's totally out of left field, and then you got to kind of you know, you're on the spot then. You got to dig into your brain and hope you can take advantage of the opportunity. But the more follow-ups you got written there, the better off you are. And the other thing is, whatever you do, don't go over that time limit. It's not like the Grammys where you get like a one-minute warning or something. I've done it once. And I won't say who it was. They were really nice about it. But the publicist will jump in and say, okay, sorry, time's up, got to go, and click. I mean, that's it. And, I mean, don't kid yourself. That's why these artists pay the publicist to do what they do. They want the designated bad guy. So, you know, so Bob Dylan, and I keep using Bob Dylan as a reference because I haven't interviewed him, but, you know, Bob Dylan doesn't want to be the one to hang up on you, so it's going to be the publicist. I have a stopwatch that I sit there, silent one, because that would be a problem. But, you know, I'm watching the time the whole time because before they're done, I want to get them to say something like, hi, this is so-and-so, you're listening to iProng Radio. If you use up all your time, you're not getting that. Now, one thing I go back and forth on is if you've got a tight window, like 15 minutes, or one time I was given 12, you may want to take 1 or 2 minutes and kind of prep with the person first. Throw some of the questions at them. See if they have an answer. If you've got, you know, I go on Wikipedia a lot, which I don't assume any of that is fact, but I'll use that as, oh, so, you know, is it true that such and such? Well, sometimes, you know, they have an answer, or they don't have an answer. They're like, oh, I really don't know anything about that. Duran Duran had a big history, or still does, of being into the digital side. They did a concert in Second Life. I thought, well, I've got to ask them about that. That's, you know, podcasters are going to love that. They're all into that. So I asked him, and what he said was, oh, no, sorry, that's the keyboard player. I don't know anything about it. So I'm looking at my next three questions about their MySpace page. I'm like, no, you know, crossing out. I'm like, I just barely had enough questions. So, you know, if I had done the prep work ahead of time, said, hey, John, what's up with this Second Life thing? And he would have said, oh, well, I don't know anything about that. And then I wouldn't have wasted time asking him. So, you know, you kind of have to game plan how you divide your little precious amount of time you have ahead of time. And then the other thing is if you start cutting down an interview, I tend to be sort of, if someone famous comes on, no matter what they say, no matter how, I kind of view it as like being sacred or something. I don't want to cut into what the famous person said. If it's just one of my co-hosts, I'll cut out the pauses and the uhs and the ers. I don't like to do that to the musician. Part of the reason is I want the people at home to be able to hear what it sounds like, you know, what the person actually sounds like when they're talking. That's something that probably each one of you has to figure out. But I think there is some validity to, you know, keeping it intact. Although on the other hand, you know, there may be questions, it's just better to cut out. We almost cut out the question when we asked John about the Second Life thing. We left it in because he made a joke. I mean, he was actually great to talk to. He made a joke about it. It was one of the funniest parts of the interview, so we left it in for that. But, you know, there may be some of you that say, well, you know what, I'm going to leave this whole thing in no matter what because it's history or something. You know? But, I mean, if you're just doing it for persuasion, keep in mind you can always keep a copy of the full interview for yourself if you just want to hear that. It may not be what you want to put out for your listeners. Now, that's the process that happens when you get someone who's like a Grammy winner, 70 million albums sold, and you don't know anybody. There's a little bit easier way to do this, and I sort of tripped over this. iProng tries to get involved with any tech conferences we can or podcasting conferences. I went to Lollapalooza over the summer, and I saw they had all these media partners. I'm like, I got to make that happen, you know. So I went home, and I looked around. I found Voodoo Music Festival in New Orleans. And so I thought, well, okay, that's the one. I'm going to take a total crapshoot. I'm going to try to get some kind of media partnership with them or something. I talked to them. They didn't need iProng, but they threw me a bone. They gave me like Media Affiliate or something, which was just like a fake title they made up. I think they were just trying to get me to go away, but that's okay. I mean, they were still, you know, nice about it. But what I did then, I started getting wise, and I said, you know, if I'm going to this, I want press credentials. So I wrote back to him and said, okay, you know, I'll take the Media Affiliate. I'll give you the 6 months of the free banner you want up, but you got to credential me as a journalist. Okay, done. Then they sent me a spreadsheet that had the email address and phone number for every publicist that was playing at the entire festival. I'm looking like, oh, so that's how I get all the Red Hot Chili Peppers publicists. I'm looking at this spreadsheet. I made like 10 copies of it and put it on disk. I'm like, I never want to lose this spreadsheet as long as I live. You know? Because I've found out that the difference between writing to info at so-and-so management company versus writing to Bob Smith at so-and-so info, and this is probably true at any business out there, it's not just that it's going to get to the right person. It's that they're saying, well, I don't put that email address out there everywhere. I don't make that publicly available. If this person has it, and then I really start being bolder at that point. So when I wrote to these bands, I said, hello, Flaming Lips. Iprong just signed on as a media affiliate of the Voodoo Music Festival that you're performing at. How would you like to do an interview? You know, so I kind of leveraged the little title they'd given me. I leveraged that. And it worked. I thought I would get maybe some of the smaller bands. I was hoping maybe one name band. That's how Duran Duran and the Flaming Lips happened. The nice thing about that, a couple of things. Duran Duran is on Warner Records. They came back about a month later and said, well, that one went well. How would you like to interview DJ Ferry Corsten? Well, I've never heard that name, so I'll get back to you, you know? And I asked one of my guys on staff who's a DJ himself. He's into it. He's like, that's like one of the most five famous DJs out there. I'm like, okay, well, definitely get him on, you know? And so every once in a while, Warner Records will come back and say, do you want to interview so-and-so? Well, that's a great thing. There's some pressure, though, because it's like I don't want to turn them down. I've done it, but at the same time, I don't want them to stop calling. So it's one of those, I haven't quite figured that one out yet. The other thing that happened, though, was Pete Yorn was on that list. Happens to be one of my personal favorites. And it was kind of weird. They added him to the list at the last minute or something. I forget exactly, but I didn't end up with his contact information until after the festival was over. But I wrote to them that he's still willing to do the interview. And Pete was really cool. I mean, I think his tour bus broke down and he was stuck along the side of the road in the snow and still called in on his cell phone, still made the time and everything. Blew him away when we had two people interviewing. You know, that's a whole other thing I'll get to. But after the Pete Yorn interview went well, I got the email from the publicist I'm looking down, and he's got all the other bands listed there. I'm like, oh, good, now I got the publicist's contact information for Foo Fighters. And now, that has not yet led to anything. You know, I've been told that I may be able to interview someone from the Foo Fighters the next time they release an album. But this leads into your best chance of getting an interview. It's going to be different for the music industry than it's going to be for what any of the rest of you are doing, but I think there's some common themes. And the main theme is that you can get someone on your show. It sounds so simple once you say it, but it took me months to figure this out. You can get someone on your show if they have something to sell or something to push or something to promote, and they feel like they can sell an extra album or make some money or something from being on your show.
What's about the Daily Show? Everyone's on the Daily Show.
Well, yeah, that's where it kind of, yeah.
It's great.
Well, it's like the Tonight Show. You know, every couple of months I'll have a guest who's like, oh, we're going to show the clip. No, I'm not promoting anything. Well, what are you here for? If you know an artist is about to release an album in a couple of months, that's when you start trying to contact your publicist. Get on the list. And I would imagine for politics, it's the same thing. They don't want to do an interview in the middle of their term. They want to do one when they're up for re-election. Now, you have to go in knowing that they're trying to sell something or they're going to push something. But again, the way we do interviews, we have no problem because we're there to talk to them about their new album anyway. They have a tendency to want to talk about the new stuff more than maybe the older, more famous stuff that more people might want to hear about. Kind of like when you go to a concert of a band that's a has-been and they all want to play the new album that nobody cares about. You're like, no, just play the classics. So again, there's that balance, and it's just, I've kind of accepted it as reality. I mean, if you're interviewing people that don't need to be on your show, then they could easily not do it. You kind of have to give some in terms of what you do. I also tell them up front, I say, you know, this is going out as an audio interview, but if you say something you regret, just let me know, I'll cut it out. You know, I'm not looking to embarrass you. And again, that may or may not apply to what you're doing, but by saying that, I feel like I put them more at ease. You know, they know they've got that leverage, that they're not measuring every word maybe so much as they otherwise would have. If they're on live TV, it's a tight wire. You know, one bad word or one stupid phrase or something, and a famous person could have their you know, it was like Terrell Owens, the football player, that, you know, that whole thing. He was talking to some 16-year-old kid or something on a college radio show or something. It probably didn't even occur to him that was going to go out, and the next day it's on ESPN, because it doesn't matter how small the audience is. If you say something outrageous, if you get on there and say your quarterback's a coward or whatever, it's going to get out there. So if you can do anything to make these guys feel at ease, I recommend it, at least going in, I guess.
On the other hand, if you're the one who, if it's your podcast,
yeah, that's true.
You're gonna get a lot of hits,
that's true. My fear with that, though, is if I kind of burn somebody like that, other musicians may be afraid to come and do the show. And again, like I said, it gets in. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I've thought about that. You know, I had somebody. I'm not going to say who it was, but somebody somebody famous called was on my show, called somebody else famous a son of a bitch. Totally joking, but I cut it out because I'm like, you know, I'm not gonna, I don't want to cause the problem. You know? But I may have gotten some traction if I left it in. So I guess it's just everybody has to make their own decision on that. But I mean, the original point there is that if you can find a reason why they would want to do your show, what's their motivation? If you catch a band that's already halfway through the tour, they're not going to do it. That's why we couldn't get the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Because they'll throw you like Chad Smith or something. Okay, they'll let you talk to the drummer, no matter how small you are. But they'd been on tour for a year and a half, and like, no, no more interviews. The other thing I found out is these guys, you wouldn't think that they would do the interviews on tour, but that's where they do it, because it's where they have all the downtime. The one time they will not do it is when they're in the studio. I have a standing agreement with someone's publicist. I don't want to say who it is, but I've been promised that I'll be one of the first interviews out of the gate. Once that person comes out of the studio, he's been in the studio for over a year. I looked it up. He really has been. But they will not leave the studio to go talk to the press. They don't want to interrupt their creative process. I don't blame them. They also have no album to promote. But the minute they finish the album, because it usually takes longer than they're supposed to, and they're racing to get out on tour, that's when they're doing the promotion. And a lot of these guys are sitting in hotel rooms all day. They're in a city they've been to four times that year. They don't want to go out because they're going to get mobbed. So they'll sit there and they'll do 10 phone interviews in a row right from their hotel room. They got a show that night. Kind of a fun thing to ask them about. But what I found is some of these guys, especially if they're famous, they'll actually do 10 interviews. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're getting asked the same questions over and over and over again. If you want an interesting answer, come up with an interesting question. You don't want to go totally oddball, like just throw some random thing at them, because they probably won't have an answer and they may be offended that you're just goofing with them. But if you can come up with something that you think would be a really good question, you think, you know what, maybe it's just off kilter, it's just obscure enough that maybe no one else has asked them this today. And I've had that where I'm kind of talking to somebody and, you know, they're putting up a good face, but then you hit on a certain question, all of a sudden it's a conversation. It's really flowing and it's, you know, it's like all of a sudden you're friends or something. But even if you have that magic spreadsheet that I have, no, you can't have a copy unless you've got a lot of money. I'm kidding people at home. But I forget, I'm mic'd up here, Jay Leno or something. Even if you have that, you're still going to be going through channels and you're still going to be working with publicists and you're still going to have time limits and you're still going to have the publicist staying on the phone the whole time. And that's just a reality. Now, I had a situation, this was just a couple of weeks ago, where I was able to bypass all this. And this won't happen often unless you're better connected than I am. But I was watching ESPN, and they were talking about how Hannah Teeter, who is a snowboarder who won the gold medal for snowboarding in Torino, she was listening to her iPod while she was competing. And I thought, well, that's different. A lot of athletes listen to iPods, no big deal, but Peyton Manning wasn't listening to his iPod like while he was throwing the touchdown in the Super Bowl. And this girl's listening to her iPod while she's out there winning the gold medal. I got to talk to her. This is different. And so I start with her official website. Can't find anything, not even an email address on there. So I start Googling for the, you know, the usual thing, publicist, management, anything at all. Can't find what I'm looking for, but I find a random search result that causes me to realize that she's not quite a friend of a friend, but she's an associate of an associate, or I put it that way, and I never knew it. I know someone who knows her. And so I thought, wow, well, now I'm like 90% of the way there, you know? And so I contacted this mutual associate, and I said, I know you know her, I know you've met her, maybe, you know, can you hook me up with something? I was thinking maybe I'd get back the email address of her publicist or something, you know, something I can work with, something that's got me in the door. Well, what I got last Friday was a phone call from Hannah Teeter on my cell phone. Hey, Bill and Dana, how you doing? Like, oh, wow, okay. Best kind of interview you can do. No publicist, no time limits. We talked for the better part of an hour. I'm probably the one who let her go because I just didn't want to take up any more of her time, and I had to pack, but...
So how'd you record that? She called you.
She had actually called because I have this, I hope you're listening, Motorola, this piece of crap cell phone that doesn't work in my house. which is terrible. I got a voicemail from her. And so that was the voicemail where she was talking like that. So then I called her up. I'm like, I got to call you on Skype. It's like, okay. No idea what that was. But then I used a Skype outline to call her cell phone, which is the way you'll end up doing a lot of these interviews. A lot of them on the cell phone. If you can get them on the phone in the hotel room, that's great, but don't expect the publicist to bend over backwards to make it happen, because you get better audio quality. A lot of times the cell phone is what you have to live with. If you can get them to install Skype, that's great. You know, all my co-hosts have Skype installed. Someone like Amber would have Skype installed. But, you know, I wasn't going to make this poor girl walk through all of that since she'd never even heard of it. But to be able to do an interview that way was just night and day. I mean, we just kind of talked and giggled and she was really open about a lot of things because, well, you know, we don't know each other, but, you know, someone had vouched for me. So, you know, she wasn't even hiding her cell phone number from me or anything. You know, so which meant that if I'm going through and I have, like, a follow-up question or something, I could probably just call her back, you know. In fact, I was supposed to call her to let her know the interview's been posted, which would never, ever, 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 ever happen when you go to the publicist. Even if the people are talking to you like they're your best friend, maybe they are, but, you know, they still got to protect themselves, and I don't blame them because of, you know, what can happen when you're famous. Your cell phone number gets out there, and like, when somebody got their BlackBerry stolen and everybody's number was out there, and I've been talking for a long time.
I have a question. We touched on this earlier, and it might be off topic, but getting media credentials might help in getting interviews. Let me tell you what happened to me with media credentials, and you guys can tell me how it's really done. But
Hi, I'm talking about getting a press pass. Maybe I shouldn't identify myself with this. But I sold some articles to some magazines, so I'm a freelance writer. I have the check stub to prove it. So I asked them, since it was going to be an ongoing basis, if I could have a press credential from two different magazines. The answer was the same. Yes, certainly, no problem. Just do it yourself. You do it. We're busy. We're not going to assign a graphic person to do anything. We don't even do press credentials. But basically, yes. So I downloaded their logo from their website, put it on, you know, Word document, wrote in there everything I needed. Also looked up a lot of different events, you know, music events, venues, other things. Looked at their requirements for a press pass and made sure everything that they required was listed on my homemade press credential. You know, who I'm doing it for, their contact information, you know, logos help, and who I am. And a key thing, too, is to include limitations to that. Like it says on my press pass, it's not for live on-air recording or interviewing. Not live on-air recording. And it doesn't transfer to friends or family. It's for one person only. And I think a key thing, too, is that there's a specific time period for that. It expires. It's not for life. That you know, think about it. That doesn't make sense. You know, you get a press pass for life. So it's a specific, you know, task or something like that. So I send a Word document, save it as a PDF, take it down to Kinko's, print it out, laminate it, hang it around your neck. And the barcodes help too. But is that how it's done? Is that how it's done? It's helped work for me.
They're regional. Yeah, you know, they're not real small, but they're, you know, well-known, well-accepted, but they're not national.
The only time I've gotten them have been for events, and most of the events that I go to that are really big, like Interbike would be one, they have a whole separate section of their website where you apply for media credentials and you tell them what kind of medium you are. Some of them are not geared to podcasting because, I mean, so many people don't know what podcasting
yeah,
is.
Most of the ones I've seen free, online, they say we don't deal with anybody that hasn't a book published in print.
Yeah, and what I've done, the first time I applied for it, it was Kajit had been sponsoring this King of the Mountain series. And they had no information about podcasting. It was all, tell us the magazine you work for, tell us the news outlet you work for. So I actually wound up taking the marketing company, emailing them. They actually passed that all the way around until it got to, like, the guy. And he said, hey, our media tent will be here. Make sure that you're there first thing in the morning and you will get a kit. So that worked out really well. Mm-hmm. At Interbike, I think I spoke to I may have spoke to somebody on the phone back, and I'm like, I don't understand where to place myself, because you have radio and you have websites, but you don't have podcasts. And they were very enthusiastic. They were like, we want podcasters, you know, fill it out this way or whatever and let us know. And then they said, you know, how many people work for you? I'm like, let's say there's me. And, you know, but I can bring up to like two or three people, and they would have media. So I'd say definitely any events that you go to, shoot for media credentials. Just go ahead and apply and you get some kind of summary of what you do.
Do you get in free if you're in media?
Or I have definitely. Yeah. Usually they are free. They want you there, especially like Interbike, because that is the industry bike show. I mean, everybody from Schwinn, everything from tricycles to $10,000 road bikes are there. And it's really interesting when you go around to talk to people. These people have done this, you know, bicycles have been around for a long time, obviously. They've done this sort of thing for a long time, and they will look at your badge. I mean, when you walk up to talk to somebody, they scan and look at your badge. Press, I need to talk to this guy. And you will get a lot of attention when they see press or media down there. So that, definitely go for that.
And the word press, and word media, I've seen working media. And
working media is what mine says.
It has to be simple, and you have to be able to see it from across the room.
The great thing is at events like that is you get to hang out in, like, the media booth. So, I mean, I'm getting a Danish in the morning, and Phil Leggett, if you don't know, is one of the co-hosts who calls all of the Tour de France's, you know, walks in and is getting coffee, you know, next to me. I'm like, I should not be here. it's a great feeling. It really, to me, once I got that, I called it Broad Walsh, and I'm, you know, on his comment line, I'm like, hey, I got media credentials. But it's a good feeling. I mean, to me, it legitimizes podcasting.
And also gave me a feeling like I need to earn this, and I need to do a good job with it. And there's some real guidelines that I've learned, too, as far as, you know, being hosted. You know, I think you said, do you get in free? But you can't push your luck, you know. I mean, it is work, and you can't start having a party. I mean, like the press pass says it's not transferable. You know, you can't bring all your friends and get them in the tent. That's not work.
There's an event that directly applies to your podcast, mm-hmm. and it's $300, and you want to go interview people in there. You want to.
Yeah.
But you're going, gosh, I just can't spend $300.
And you have to be there to interview them. So
right.
That's why so much stuff is free for media.
Mm-hmm. Is there any value that maybe somebody can address this? Is there any value to joining something like the Atlanta Press Club? I often wondered that, if that would be something that, because you have a lot of guest speakers, and obviously you get to meet with them. Of course, then again, sometimes, you know, the media doesn't look at us very favorably. Maybe they wouldn't take us very seriously, but I didn't know if that was an option. Or does anybody know?
If you've got something that can get you in the door, like, I won't go in saying I want to interview on my podcast, iProng Radio. I'll say I want to do an audio interview for my website, iProng. It's been around 3 years. We have this many page views. It's funny, we've reached a point where websites are now looked at as traditional media compared to podcasts. I'm thinking of someone who works for a newspaper and sort of uses her newspaper's name to get her foot in the door. Now, you don't want to deceive. You don't want to, I always point out to people, iProng Radio is not a radio show. We're not on FM. Because that'll come back and burn you. You know, you burn a publicist like that, and they find out it was a podcast afterwards. But I don't think you have to use the word podcast if you're dealing with people who don't. There's still a stigma to some people.
Yeah.
You say it's an audio interview on your website. You're telling the truth, right? Because we put it out on the podcast. We also put it out as a direct MP3 download on our website. Podcast is just one of the ways that we get the audio interview out there.
Why is podcast a stigma?
People don't know what that is.
Oh, you mean just because they don't understand?
And because it's looked down as the lowest form of media. The way people look at podcasting now is the way they looked at websites 5 years ago.
Yeah, and if you say internet, I mean, some people just think porn or something. You know,
That's why I describe us as an online publication, which is kind of a mouthful. But if say I got a website, we'll leave self-trust or something on it, you know? The other thing I found getting credentialed, there's a certain event where I waited until like the last minute and sent in my credentials, and oh me, this is why I bring her. Thought I'd get approved, and I didn't, and called up and fought with the guy and fought, and well, finally he credentialed me at the end, but I ticked him off to the point where it was kind of probably a good thing that he left, and I thought, well, that really didn't work out very well, you know, I almost didn't get my credentials, and I got somebody mad at me. So what I did for that event, when I went to cover the event,
is, well, I found out who the replacement was, and long before the credentials started the next year for that event, I wrote to her and said, hi, I just want to introduce myself now before it gets crazy. Since you're new, here's the links to all our coverage from last year. Here's all the stuff we did, so you can take a look now, you know, and you can have an idea ahead of time whether you think we should get credentialed. That way, you know, you always want to be the first to say hello and shake hands. And at that point, I wasn't asking anything from her. It's like, here's some coverage of your event. Your job is to get coverage. Here's some coverage, you know. You're new. Take this and run with it. And sure enough, this year, my whole staff got credentialed. So, you know, if you can, you know, don't think that they're not watching. I'll put it that way. I've seen colleagues of mine get credentialed, and they think you get credentialed, and then you go there and you get to do whatever you want. But don't think they're not following up to see who, you know, they're not going to write up and yell at you and say, how come you didn't do it, but you may not be able to get in next year. I have a story I'm going to finish with, but is there anyone else who wanted to jump on or any other?
Well, yeah. I wanted to add about, like, some trade shows. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. I'm with All Games Radio. We do video game internet radio, live internet radio, podcasting, all that stuff. One thing, like, especially with some of our trade shows, the old E3, which no longer exists, and Game Developers Conference last week that I was at, one thing that they asked for, and I don't know if other trade shows asked for, is a business license. So you're going to, you know, if you want to get in as press for some of these, they will want to see like a business license or a tax ID or something. So get something, you know, get a business license if you're really serious about it. I don't know how much it costs. I wasn't the one that did it for us. But that will help you get the credentials. And then once you get into like the trade show, like, you know, and I know this would probably work for like comics or, you know, anything other else like that, they love talking to people. And internet radio, a lot of, you know, like tech people will get it. And they know that the people that are listening are the hardcore target audience. And so what I was doing at GDC is I was getting audio interviews on the show floor, but I was meeting with the marketing person, exchanging cards, and then emailing them when I got home, which is something nobody told me I was supposed to do. When you get a whole bunch of business cards, you email them and introduce yourself, say, hey, we met, you know, I'd like to, you know, here's a little bit of information about my radio show, you know, and give all the stats on our website. And they write me back and they'll say, yeah, once we get this product ready, I'll be in touch with you and we can schedule an interview and things like that. So that's another way of getting it. You know, it's a little bit different from the music industry, but, you know, because they're the not so famous people, but they really do want to talk to your audience if you present yourself in the right way. And they, you know, some people don't care if it's a podcast as long as it gets to their audience. And podcast really has that, you know, that hardcore audience for that topic because they're the ones that actively went out and looked for your show.
Okay, I think we only have about 1 minute left, so I want to thank all of you for coming. I'm going to tell one more quick story, and there's a lesson there in this. I promised someone I would tell the Bob Weir story. I'm not sure if they're here. Bob Weir, the Grateful Dead, that interview was handed to me. He was making a public appearance at an event that I was credentialed for, but I didn't know about it till last minute. I take that back. I did know. What it was is I wrote to the publicist and requested the interview. Thought I'd get it because he was there. Never heard back. Kind of forgot about it because I was preparing for, this was a conference that was huge for us. I'd do a month of preparation on it. Totally forgot about it until the last minute when I heard, oh, by the way, the interview's on. This is the night before I was getting on a plane. So I'm up all night writing questions. The lesson learned there is if you think there's any chance the interview might happen, at least write some basic questions. Take 10 minutes, hit their website. Just something you can pull out of your back pocket, and if because otherwise you're going to get 1 hour of sleep the night before you get on a plane like I did. Because I had written the question so hastily, I was sitting in a press conference right beforehand, and I pulled out the questions, and I thought, you know, I'm not sure I have enough. And so I was banging my head against the wall, and I came up with one more question for the end, and I'm thinking, well, this event's in San Francisco. So I'm like, Bob Weir, Grateful Dead, they were always like San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury, all this stuff. I'll ask him what it's like to be back in San Francisco after all these years. Brilliant idea, right? Sounds like a great question to end with, a feel-good thing. I'm sure he's going to talk about all the old memories and everything. And I had a co-host with me who was sitting in the press conference, and I kind of told him that I was adding another question. I didn't get a chance to tell him what it was.
So we go in for the interview. We meet Bob, who is, God, one of the most kindest, gentlest people I've ever met. I mean, forget famous people, just a great guy. I was almost nervous. I was like, I don't want to screw it up because I don't want to offend this really nice guy. Well, we're asking the questions. We're going back and forth, and we're looking off the same sheet. And the way we're alternating is we get to this question at the end that I had written, and it's for my co-host to ask. And he just, like, looks at me, and he reads the question. He kind of shakes his head at me, and I'm thinking, oh, that's nice of him. He's letting me ask the last question. What he's really saying is, that's a really stupid question. Let's not ask that one. Then I misinterpreted this. So I looked and said, hey, Bob, what's it like to be back in San Francisco after all these years? And he just looks at me, like, stunned, really quietly, gently says, I've lived here my whole life. I'm like, the only time I've ever actually, and the publicist was sitting across, just looks over at me like, you retard. I actually said to Bob, I said, sorry, stupid question, we'll cut it out. And he's like, no, it's okay. I actually did cut it out because I felt like I put him in a stupid situation. The lesson learned there is, once you're going into it, you got your questions. If they're researched, go with them, because if you start adding questions at the last minute that are not well researched, you can bring down the quality of your whole interview. So that's all I got. We're way over. We're done. Day's done. I hope to see all of you drinking tonight. And thanks for coming.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of Unconcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.